A bill which would have redefined consent as an enthusiastic yes means yes is expected to soon be voted down by the ACT Legislative Assembly, with concerns over such a new definition undermining the honest mistake defense. This bill has raised questions about how we define consent and upon whom the burden of proof should be placed, questions which lawmakers across Australia and the world are still trying to find the right answer to. To discuss the bill and the legal questions surrounding the definition of consent, I'm joined by Karen Willis, Executive Officer of Rape and Domestic Violence Services Australia. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
No worries at all. Thank you for the discussion.
So why is the word no not enough, and why are we having this debate about enthusiastic consent?
I think that what the idea is that that if someone wants to engage in intimacy with somebody else, it's about, yahoo, honey, you're gorgeous, let's go. It's about being enthusiastic and being very positive. The just say no actually has a really nasty history in our law. It comes from ideas in England, where of course we've inherited our laws from, that firstly that women were property of men, and secondly that they were in a constant state of sexual consent and were only withdrawing their consent when they said no. Mm-hmm. So it's actually got really nasty historical implications. But what we do know about sexual assault and about the process that can go on before, often by the time the sexual assault begins, the person who's experienced it is quite scared, is unsure of what's going on, is afraid for what might happen next. And so just the idea of no really doesn't cut the mustard. Secondly, the average sex offender really doesn't listen to no. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone's going to sexually assault someone, what that person says or what they do is really not within their area of interest at that point of time. They've made a decision and they're going ahead. So in terms of negotiating ethical consent, it really doesn't help us at all. So whether the final words are enthusiastic consent or whatever else, what the concept is that it should be, if two or more people are going to engage in sexual activity, it's incumbent on everybody checking that everybody else is not only not saying no, but in fact really keen to do this. And if everybody's really keen and it's a yahoo, then it's fine.
So Karen, what you're saying though is that such a change, enthusiastic consent, to be clear, would not really affect cases of like sexual assault or such, because would it deter them?
I think, look, to some extent, One of the many things that, to some extent, laws around consent are really more of a public mm-hmm. educative process. It's saying that just the absence of no, or the, you know, it's because someone's not pushing you away and screaming in your face to leave me alone. There's a whole stack of other subtle ways that people will indicate that they're not consenting. And it's actually incumbent on everyone to make sure that the consent is enthusiastically being given right at the start and all the way through. So to some extent, there's a public education component to this. Now, then how that's treated in the courts, of course, can become quite a different process. But I think some of the arguments that we're hearing around this, that, you know, it's destroying the art of seduction and all sorts, and mistaken belief mm-hmm. and all of those sorts of things, I think we're really wanting to move away from that. The art of seduction, for example, assumes the hunted and the huntee. I mean, really, I think we've moved on from that concept, at least I hope so.
Hopefully.
And there's the ideas around that a mistaken belief. Well, you can't really mistake if you actually have a discussion with someone and say, you know, whatever it is you say, but you're actually confirming that your intention is this and their intention is mm-hmm. that, and you're both on the same page together and you're both really keen. And then you can't have a mistaken belief.
Right.
I actually think that even
so it's,
that
just, it's about being
it really
it's about being explicit with it and making it right. So Karen, with this, what currently, you know, a lot of the problem with these sort of things is that the burden of proof is on defendants. Would a change in legislation change this burden of proof? How would it affect
actually,
the legal process?
The burden of proof is on the complainant. The defendant actually doesn't have to prove anything. It's the burden of proof is on the complainant, and particularly...
Oh, sorry, I meant, yeah, the
yeah,
other
yeah,
way
yeah,
around,
yeah,
yes.
Sorry, yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so what we have at the moment is it is pretty much 100% the complainant and the prosecutor and the police have to prove the case, and the defendant really doesn't have to do very much at all. So I think what we're looking for is We're saying in a sexual intimacy, it's both people should be negotiating and agreeing to ethical consent. So in terms of proving whether or not that occurred, I think both people have to provide evidence. So if someone says, I believed there was consent, well, they need to show what steps they took and what made them believe that. And then, of course, the jury or the judge will make a decision about whether that's what a reasonable person would assume.
And the other kind of, I guess, question around this is, would this kind of bill create a precedent for sort of government regulation of sex?
Oh, gosh. I just don't understand this concept. I have heard that in a lot of places. The idea that sexual assault is about sex is really something we need to also move away from. What happens in sexual assault is it's a violent act of power and control where sex is used as the tool. It's not about sex. Sex is a loving, caring, marvelous activity that adults around the world enjoy on a regular basis, and isn't that a good thing? And that's a mutual and consensual, and whether it's for 5 minutes or the next 50 years, all of that is absolutely fine. That experience has nothing to do with what we're talking about when we talk about sexual assault.
So Karen, I guess with this enthusiastic consent bill likely to be voted down, what does it look like in terms of, you know, moving forward in terms of consent and changing public opinions? What does the future look like?
What the recommendation in the ACT is that there was some problems with the way that bill was worded, and there was some concerns for unintended consequences. And we, in fact, were part of the group that said, oh, maybe you want to rethink this. But so what the recommendation is, that, and the ACT, as far as I understand, is going down this track, is they're looking at a much broader review of a whole range of laws in this space, and we'll look at consent within that. In terms of sex offenders, yes, consent is an important issue, but there's a whole range of other laws that are really important as well. So if we're going to start tinkering around the edges, often we end up with problems. So if we want to look at whether it's sexual assault law or larceny or fraud or any area of law, it's much better to actually have a look at the whole piece. And if we need reform, which clearly in sexual assault matters where we have a less than 1% conviction rate across this country, we absolutely need to reform these laws. And so we need to look at it as a job lot, really, rather than just picking pieces around the edges.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Karen, for coming and clarifying it for us.
Thank you for your time.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye.